Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Extended weekend for Marty Baron. That means we start in the bakery here to kick a fresh Chris Baker to start things off. Hi, Bakes. How's your cap situation here on July 28th?
My salary cap is always, I'd like to have a higher ceiling on my salary cap, but no, things are going well. Happy Monday. Nice to be with you here on this July 28th. Summer is moving a little too fast for my liking, Duffer, so hopefully we can kind of slow it down here starting today.
Well, Marty will be happy to know it's officially late July, and that gets him excited. He's on the links today where you've, I think, been a little bit of late. How's that treating you?
It's been a nice summer. My scorecards haven't been nice, but it's just nice to get out there, have fun. Did a little bit of that yesterday. Maybe we'll talk about that for best of the weekend later in the show.
Oh,
little sneak peek, Duffer. Little sneak peek.
With the eyebrow raise, which was not seen on WGR Sports Radio 550, but let me tell you, it was there. You know, there was a little bit of a reason behind why I asked you about your cap situation. The Sabres have spent a little more over the course of the weekend. Connor Timmins, 2-year deal, $2.2 million per. He'll be playing for the first time as a Sabre this fall. The Sabres, as per Puckpedia this morning, currently stand 17th in money committed for next year. And they're within like $1 million to $1.5 million about a handful of teams. So let's just say middle for where they are with, you know, 23 contracts included in that. Obviously, Devon Levi still needs one, but it's not going to affect the number. They're not going to carry three goalies. And it remains to be seen whether they carry 14 forward, seven defense, et cetera, et cetera. The point is, it looks like they're pretty much done their spending. They're kind of in the middle. And it's been a weird summer for teams that were looking to spend. How do you view where Buffalo is at on the cap? All those teams behind them that don't really have a way of spending their remaining cap dollars at this point.
Yeah, I think they're coming into the season with some flexibility. Obviously, I think they're, you know, leaving some on the table. When you look at the teams that still have cap room with it going up next year, it's pretty wild because there's not like a lot of these teams are waiting to sign a big ticket RFA that they just haven't hammered out a deal with yet. There's a couple teams that have some maneuvering to do. You know, Marco Rossi needs to get done with Minnesota and so on. There's a couple other, you know, I think LaFerriere out in LA needs to get done. I think he's going to take up a chunk of what they have left. When I look at the Ducks, over $21 million left in space, and Mason McTavish not going to get all of it. So it's been a transition year with the cap going up. When I bring it back to the Sabres, I do think it's flexibility. Pretty much everyone's done. And I think that they've actually done some decent work. We could talk a little bit about Timmins. It's not really going to hurt you at 2.2. I think you're going to get that utility out of him. But what does it mean still if like a Brian Rust pops loose? You know, some of the writers, whether it's LeBron or some of the other guys that were tapped in, were thinking that this was going to be an offseason that was going to extend a little bit. You could see some activity post-arbitration that a couple other names could shake loose. And the Sabres would probably have to maneuver, though, to fit Rust in. But I'm still wondering, like, I think a layperson, we think they're done, but we don't know for sure. I think there's still a little fraction of potential that something else could break loose and the Sabres could be players in it. And they have a little bit of flexibility to make a move if they elect to do so.
Yeah, let's use Rust as a hypothetical, just in the ballpark of $5 million per. If you're bringing in a Rust, you're probably moving out someone like a Krebs at the very minimum. So you're looking at one of the, you know, kind of bottom five forwards that are in that 1.5 to 2 million range that could potentially be moved. So that pretty much takes care of it right there. They're not going to have to do, you know, too much, I wouldn't think, work-wise. But whenever you even broach the subject of a Rust, then it immediately impacts, in my opinion, Benson, Quinn, Doan, what is the trickle down here? If you actually hypothetically spend right up to the cap here, bringing in Rust or whomever before night one.
Hypothetical is that it's worth it for the experience that a Brian Rust would bring to you on the ice and in the dressing room. And Let the guys battle it out. The players will figure it out. They'll sort it out with the competition that happens in camp. One of the things I like about this season for the Sabres and for Lindy Ruff and his staff is that they actually have a training camp. They don't have to boogie early and go overseas. And that's like something that I think it's worth impressing upon the fan base coming into this season. I know it's Bills fever right now, but I'm wired hockey and I'm ready to get the season started because they're going to have the runway of a full camp. And, you know, you can say maybe maybe too long of a preseason schedule. This is the year that I'm glad they actually have the extra preseason games if they do bring a rust in and kind of figure it out. There is a trickle-down effect, but you could also insulate the top of your lineup by getting a player like that in, just letting these guys battle it out and let the players sort it out. I like the just like we were talking about cap flexibility, give Lindy Ruff some flexibility too. Mm-hmm. You know, adding a player like that who I think theoretically could play both sides. You need more help on the left side. I get it.
Yeah.
But play around with that too. But no, I mean, again, low probability, Duffer, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But worth talking about here as we, you know, look, I think the bottom line is, Duffer, with a rust, it's really, there's an element of danger going into the season with a Kulik and Benson maybe overplaced in your lineup. And that's why for me, it's still worth thinking about. Right.
That's maybe as, and I would, wild card is the wrong word because Josh Norris is clearly an NHL player and he's clearly capable of producing. That's why he was the biggest piece in that deal with Dylan Cousins. The salary shows us that, but we've not seen it. We've had three games to view Josh Norris. So yeah, I honestly still have a lot, like you said, when, cause you kind of launched in there with Yuri Kulik. I feel the same as you do there. Like, I liked a lot of what Yuri did last season. It's also a pretty big expectation that, you know, you're going to get increased production from him, which you're going to need based on who he's likely to play with.
And my thought on rust too is it goes back. This isn't a move where Kevin Adams would just be amassing talent. Mm-hmm. I think it truly is building a team.
Okay.
And that's why I focus on the locker room and, like, you know, the addition of Josh Doan, what that's going to do to your locker room. If you read the piece that Matthew Fairburn wrote on The Athletic about Doan, he talked to some folks very close to him, Arizona State coach, Chicago Steel, people that were familiar with him. They speak to the character that the Sabres are getting. Keep adding to it because Doan is a very young player. Mm-hmm. Get an older version of that guy. So again, that's kind of where my head is at in this, you know, next, what, month and a half or so leading mm-hmm. up to camp. And it, along the way, to answer your question, it does protect you against overexposing a Yuri Kulik and Benson. And that's kind of, I think those players can do it. I think they're incredibly talented, both of those young players, Kulik mm-hmm. and Benson. But just in case, add that extra layer of experience. And I think it's really worth kicking the tire on.
Marty's not here to defend himself, but I think it's fair to say when I was pushing him on Doan a while back, he couldn't quite get to where I was at. Like, in the sense of, I feel like if everything Matthew wrote about Doan and the significance of the trade, i.e. Paterka going out the door, it's not just about Kesselring. Like, this needs to be a two player for one player type situation that can come in yeah. and do something. Like, I did never once when that trade went down, did I think, well, Doan's just going to be fourth line to start. Do I have to change my thinking? Like, it's because I see him in the top nine somewhere, but I just don't know where.
It's hard. It's still hard to figure out. Like, when the paint was still fresh on that trade, and I still had the post-it notes right next to my laptop here, you know, I had him out there with McLeod, and it's either Quinn or Greenway, and just try, because I think that's where he fits.
Yeah.
He's a middle six feel. The way that he can hunt pucks, the way that he can forecheck, and he does have more goals in his stick than he showed. This was a kid. He came out, he scored two goals in his first game.
Oh, he had a torrid start.
Adrenaline, right? Yeah. Yeah. Adrenaline, everything else, playing on the rink that he always played in. But I think, to your point, there is more than meets the eye if you're just looking at his counting stats. With Doan being young, the character, again, I think going to a new team, he's going to want to come in here and be just impress his teammates, win them over, work his tail off. So it's going to be, I'm excited. I'm really excited for this camp just because, you know, I think that he's going to open up a lot of eyes for fans that I think didn't really know who Josh Doan was as a player. They knew what they gave up in Paterka, but I think that he's going to impress a lot of people. And I think including the coaching staff, most importantly.
Impossible to know what they would roll out for lines when training camp starts. Doan Quinn Benson, who has the greater likelihood to jump higher up in the lineup when the season starts, based on this camp that you're talking about? Because honestly, I get it, and I like Jack Quinn, and we know the new contract, and we know what he's done, and we still, I think most people believe in the projections, the capability for Quinn. But to me, that does not guarantee him much at this point. If Doan came in and for whatever reason found chemistry with somebody, I would be willing to go with that. Same with Benson, who got the sample size that he earned last year as well. But and we haven't even got to the most often talked about top prospects in Rochester, who, again, to your point, are going to get a real camp this year, not a split camp where it was super cool for them to play all the NHL preseason games in North American buildings, but they didn't have a chance to compete with the actual Sabres.
Yeah. Listen, man, that's another wrinkle. That's another layer of why this camp for me is really compelling. Mm-hmm. Are the young players. To go back to your question though about Quinn, I think that the Sabres would love, their brain trust would love it to be Quinn, because that means he came into camp, he's another year away from the Achilles surgery, it's strengthened up, he's quicker, he's got more explosion in his skating stride, and we know that he can score goals when he's going. And he didn't have that bad of an end of the season either, by the way.
Right.
The answer, I do believe, is Benson in that scenario, because of his, you know, the metrics, his underlying metrics. When he played with Thompson last year, were pretty, I think, significant. They pop out at you when you look at them. I think Tage likes playing with them. I think that works favorably in Benson's direction. In that question, as you pose it, that's my answer. But I think if Quinn pops, that's a great situation for the Sabres. I don't see Doan there yet because of the role. I love the concept of Doan and Greenway, opposite wings, going in on the forecheck into the corners and making things happen and pressuring those D, and some pucks can pop out where, whether it's the defenseman or the centerman, whoever's higher in the zone makes things happen. Now, I can see it in my head, and I kind of like that thought. That's why I kind of want to reserve that workman-like effort that Doan can bring to that middle of the lineup.
Do you see any opportunity for standout camps and second thoughts from the hockey department as they finalize the roster for opening night when it comes to Austlin, Hellenius, and now the elder statesman of the group, Rosén, who has three full AHL seasons under his belt, all of which saw improvement?
We got a lot of bodies ahead of him. It's going to be very hard for one of those guys to get a crack, especially for the types of spots that might be available or not, more likely not available. Mm-hmm. The play, I'm very interested in Rosén. We've heard Vinny Prospel mention how he's been maybe a little too, he wasn't as assertive as you would have liked him to have been when he's gotten his spots. He's got to come up and just go and take a job from someone. He's been a little more reserved, where maybe he came in, Rosén has, and wanted to just more blend in. If he comes in with a different mindset, we know he can play the game well. We know he's responsible. We know he's got a smart stick. He can shoot that puck when given a little bit of space to get it off. Hellenius is a guy that I'm really excited for because I think he's got the attitude. He's got the frame. I think he's like that. He's got that mindset where he just doesn't care. He is the guy that would be assertive, but he's still pretty young. Mm-hmm. You know, he just turned 19. It's pretty wild, right? So I think to answer your question there, it's hard to see one of those three popping. Rosén, to me, is the guy that I think has to take the bull by the horns and come in and just own it and just have a mindset that he's going to go out and win a job. It's the only way it's going to happen for him.
And you want Austlin to just be the number one guy in Rochester, hopefully without the 21-game absence due to injury that felled him at the start of last year, but also at the same time motivated him and allowed him to come back as one of the hottest regular season players in the American Hockey League for the second half. Is that how you view Austlin? Because, look, I don't have any formula at this point. or real comps among the group of, let's say, Danforth, Krebs, Kozak, Ostlund, when it comes to hockey intelligence. But I'm giving it away by saying I don't think any of those, like of those four, I don't think any of them are smarter than Ostlund when it comes to playing the game.
No, I think for me, my position with Ostlund is it's more of an injury recall when the inevitable, I mean, it's hockey, right? Like, so whether it's one of those centermen, it could be a winger also. I think that that's part of the flexibility that they have this year. But for me, it's an injury recall. Maybe it's around Thanksgiving, maybe, you know, right around that time, something usually happens. And he'll have a little bit of momentum in theory coming up great, to your point. Great finish to the year down in Rochester, really got it going. If he can start that year again, look, he can create upward pressure and force his way up, just like he did last year. But I do think he's that guy waiting in the wings to plug and play when the inevitable injury happens to the forwards.
We can definitely go through a little bit, and it's like a lot of things we do in the summer. It's a bit of a refresher, and especially when it comes to the American Hockey League, you don't quite see and add all the pieces up as they go because they're not the priority signings, if you will, within the organization. But just trying to put it in a little bit of depth chart form as we go on, because there's a handful of players that we got used to hearing their names in Rochester that are unlikely to be part of the equation this year. But I am really, obviously here with Chris Baker at Sabres Prospects. The news over the weekend was Connor Timmins avoiding arbitration, 2-year deal, 2.2 million per. We've been talking about it in the context of where that has left Buffalo from a salary cap standpoint. They've got about 5.1 to spend if they were still, eyeing the marketplace to bring in somebody that would command a salary like that, and obviously would then come into a higher spot in the lineup. They're basically middle of the NHL right now as far as money spent for this upcoming season. There's not a lot of dominoes to fall for a lot of teams. Chris laid out some of the prominent restricted free agents that teams are likely to get business done with and retain or not. One of the first things you mentioned, Bakes, was Anaheim. And yeah, we've all fixated on them all summer because of the massive amount of money they had to spend. They brought in Kreider. They signed Granlund, and they still have a bleep ton of money left over. So, like, what do you think is going to happen with McTavish here? Is he just going to really, really, like, look at all this money? Do you guys want me to be the guy? Is he going to remain in trade rumors? Is he someone you should pursue? What do you think of Mason McTavish?
Doesn't it feel like Boston could just be lurking there? Now,
Oh,
that's a team, though. They only
yeah,
have,
but Boston's
well,
lurking because Eichel next year, if he doesn't get his
they
extension
are, and they
up.
only have about 2 million in space also. So they would have to do some maneuvering there as well. But doesn't he always just like McTavish just feels like that type of player? And there's only a handful of teams that have the draft pick capital for an offer sheet, because I think that's kind of where you're going here, right? Now,
Or trade, like, I mean, yeah, but
it's
yeah.
tricky though. Like, I think at some point, like, when were the offer sheets last year, the two in St. Louis? It was right around now, wasn't it? Like
I
August.
think
It was
so,
pretty late
yeah.
into the season. I think that shoe could drop potentially, but there's not a lot of teams that can make it happen. And Verbeek's got a ton of cap space. I just don't see the resolution being Mason McTavish plays for a different team. But you know, I for some reason you always think about the Bruins. It's like, you know, he's that type of player, that traditional heavy style that we always come to think about when you hear the Boston Bruins brand pop into your brain.
Haven't they done that 6 times already this summer?
True. I know. They got their big ticket with what, Tanner Janot. But no, I that's gonna be an interesting one. But no, there's so many other teams though, you know, and to kind of flip the script though, Duffer, when you look, like there's a couple teams that are over the cap too. So let's not pretend that, you know, it's but some of them are, you know, whether it's Vegas with Pietrangelo, they could take him off and solve that. Carey Price is still on the books. You take his 10 and a half off and Montreal's fine. The one team that I look at, and I'm kind of curious to see what happens here, is Jersey. They have to get Luke Hughes done. He's the other RFA, like at the top of that list that we haven't mentioned yet. And they only have about 6 million in change. And I'm pretty sure, I'm not a capologist by any means, but I'm certain that Luke Hughes is going to get more than what they have in their kitty. So they have to do some maneuvering too. Kind of like what we talked about. If the Sabres did hypothetically go out and get a Brian Ross, they got to make a move. Got to subtract something that you currently have on your books. What's Jersey going to do? Right? Okay. There's a lot there. Yeah.
Now, when it comes to Jersey, people have, you know, and he's got a little bit of control in the situation, obviously. But if they moved Hamilton, that would then open the door to give Hughes whatever they want to give him. And they've already made some smaller offseason acquisitions up front. But who would you rather have, Brian Rust or Dawson Mercer?
I'm looking at the value to the room. And I know, listen, I think that obviously Dawson Mercer fits into your timeline with all these young players. But when I look at the Buffalo Sabres still being one of the youngest teams in the league, mm-hmm. I want that experience. I want the guy that's been there and done that. He's got his cups. Come into that room. It's all about the attitude, the work ethic. That's really why I've been focused on him. I mean, this news came out before the trade deadline that Kyle Dubas was potentially interested in some of the Buffalo Sabres younger players or more developed prospects. At that time, all roads led to Brian Rust. For me, had a great season. I know there's injury issues that you got to budget for with him by the style of play and everything else. I don't care. It's the value to the room. It's that leadership. Need more of that here. That's how I'm answering that question. And listen, Dawson Mercer, heck of a player. Mm-hmm. Would fit really well. And he's only $4 million, I think.
Right. But coming off of, you know,
yeah,
a challenging year. That was part of why the fixation from the media and fans, presumably in Jersey, happened when, you know, they lost Hughes and they, even before that, it just, Mercer never got quite to the level this year. So then that kind of exacerbated some of their scoring challenges,
and,
you know.
And who was his coach when
Paul Cotter dried up, you know.
Yeah, right, there you go. Dawson
Mercer was not there to rescue them.
Who was on the bench when Dawson Mercer was playing an elevated level of hockey?
I don't know. Who was it?
I don't know. It might have been Lindy.
You know, when it comes to the most simple math, I really, really, really struggle.
It might have been Lindy. Yeah, so... That's another wrinkle there in your question, I guess, to throw out there. But my answer doesn't change. It's still Brian Rust.
Okay. But did any of your thinking change, or did you end up with more questions than answers when Buffalo signed Danforth, which then makes the bottom of the forward group have a realistic challenge between Danforth, Krebs, Kozak, Doan, Malenstein, and who knows, maybe somebody from Rochester, you know, muddying those waters. Like, what did you think when that happened?
I don't think that Danforth is brought in to be an extra forward, that's for sure. And I think that whole thought was cemented after watching the most recent embedded that came out as well. I think it's pretty clear that they have designs on him being in the lineup on opening night. So no, it just goes back to that competition. There's a body. There's clearly a spare part. I think there's an NHL contract that's going to go through waivers, could land in Rochester. I think it's pretty clear. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about the obvious ones like a Zach Jones or someone like that, or maybe even a Bryson. Who knows, right? Mm-hmm. But no, I think it's that competition. But it's also that fourth line is going to look a little different. They may not be as physical as maybe they had intended to when they brought in that trio of Malenstein, Lafferty, and Obey Kubel. But I think the tenacity, I think the just grittiness to go to the front of the net and be a little bit more chaotic and just have that tenacity, I think that's what you're going to see there. So, no, I mean, I think it's tricky. That's where, to your earlier point, if there's another deal to be made before training camp where they use up some of that $5-plus million, it's coming. I think it's a body and futures prospect that's coming out of there. It could be Krebs. It's one of those that goes and Krebs is likely, I think, a likely one for me. And I go back to Ryan Johnson. I know he's got the 2-year deal. He would be an attractive one also to facilitate a deal with a team like Pittsburgh, I think. Right. I don't want to move off him, but again, bodies. You have a lot of bodies.
I would agree. And do you see Danforth then more as a center? I know he's versatile enough for both. And we also saw Kozak last year. He would have to go through waivers. Do you see Danforth more as the middle guy or not?
I like him better as a winger.
Yeah.
based on my knowledge of his game, and I've seen him quite a bit, I like him better as a winger, but I like the fact that he is versatile. Mm-hmm. I do like the fact that he can play down the middle. It's just a preference. Yeah. It's just a preference, you know, and that's where, same thing with Krebs. Mm-hmm. You can go both ways with him.
Right.
Play the middle, play the wing in that role.
Yeah.
But I would give the edge right now coming into camp. I mean, Krebs is kind of where he was last year. He's got to fight to win that job.
Right. He has to. And yet all of this talk that we've, you know, taken here for the first half hour of the week, there's no real foundation to be able to just add one of these newcomers and then slot everybody else where they were, because Norris didn't play. Greenway was out due to injury. Like, just those two players alone makes like, we don't know. We can't sit here and say, well, they are this when Norris is healthy and Greenway's impacting a third line. We don't know that with this configuration of players.
Norris unlocks everything. He's the biggest storyline, I think, for me coming into training camp. And Greenway, we do know. When Greenway came back in the lineup, when he was hurt in the middle of the season, came back in, noticed him right away. You know what you have with him. I get excited thinking about him in the middle of the lineup. I really do. And I can't put a $4 million player on the fourth line. I'm unwilling to do that. You know, mm-hmm. like if they go out, like he's the one guy that you don't push down. You know, there's problems that happen if they make another deal, and you got to avoid making a problem with him. But no, Norris, to answer the question, he's, for me, that most compelling storyline. We saw just a glimpse, but not enough to know, is it Kulik or Norris?
Right.
That plays with Tate.
Right.
And maybe, and presumably Benson.
Well,
that's kind of where my head's at.
You felt the energy from Chris Baker so far. It's because he, like the rest of us, is getting ready for everything to ramp up in early September. We have Sabres Fan Fest presented by Coca-Cola Zero Sugar. Happens on September 13th. It's all part of really a kind of a kickoff weekend, in the sense that we have Prospects Challenge happening at the same time. As far as Fan Fest is concerned, you got player appearances, games, activities, ton of great things that we've seen over the last number of years. Hockey Fest, the street hockey tournament's a part of it as well. Sabres.com/fanfest for all the info on that and more from Chris Baker as we continue here on day one of a new week on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome back. Marty's got the day off. Charitable guy that he is. He's golfing. Chris Baker at Sabres Prospects with us now. Bakes, are there stadiums across America that you still want to get to that you haven't been to?
Ooh, stadiums. There's definitely some baseball stadiums. Like, I haven't gone to the old, Comiskey, like some of the older ones. Mm. I'd like to go to, is it still called Minute Maid down in Houston?
They have a new title this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. The juice box is no longer. They've also run out of juice. I think they have like 36 guys injured right now. So that.
Now, and I've been out to Red Rocks. Yes. In the past, and like stood up at the top and looked down at the amphitheater, and you can see, you know, like you're actually looking towards Denver. Mm-hmm. I'd like to actually be in both of, you know, the baseball and football stadiums in Denver and kind of look back the other way. I have a feeling that those views, if you're at the top of those stadiums, would be pretty cool. But there's others. But yeah, those are the big ones. I haven't gone to the new Yankee Stadium, although I'm sure, you know,
yeah,
what good could come out of that? I'm kidding. There's a lot of Yankees fans that I'm looking
to get
a response out of.
Not been to the new one either. But I did get to Dodger Stadium over the weekend for the first time. And it blew me away. Like, I'd been here in the last couple of years. I was actually, like, you know, rollerblading all around the city, and I was around Dodger Stadium one day. But it's not the same as actually being in it. And yet for my entire life, watching it on TV, it just didn't hit me until I was actually, like, the mountains on almost every night is perfect in LA. And it was, Like, it was breathtaking. and this was not for baseball, it was for music, but the same. And I was just like, now, you do get spoiled by the modern day amenities of new stadiums. And the biggest challenge with any older stadium is entrance and exit. Like, you just don't have the capacity to move people freely through the concourse the way you would but other than that, I mean, it's just like, this is incredible.
That's a cool drive, because you drive up. I've been to Dodger Stadium. Actually, yeah. it was a 2010 NHL draft. I was out there. That was the Mark Pezek draft. Taylor Hall, Sagan, we're 1 and 2. Second day, ended on a Saturday. Got out of there. I got picked up at Staples Center, and we went right over. I changed in the car, went right over to a Yankees-Dodgers game. The Yankees were in town that day, so it was June. Someone could look it up. Cool experience. So you drive up. I know what you're talking about. You're going up that hill, up that mountain. And it's tricky getting out of there also, but it's an experience. But once you get in that stadium, yeah, you can feel the history in there. And it's such a wild dynamic. We had good seats along the third base line, right above like the dugout, maybe 20 rows up. Mm-hmm. And you're looking in the outfield, and the outfield is just like party central at mm-hmm. a Dodgers game. I'm not sure, you know, it's not a place I would probably want to hang out there. It looked pretty wild. But that was also like a 4 hour plus baseball game that day.
Of course it was.
I think Kershaw was on, and it was just like, when's this going to end? But no, there were a lot of people there. You got like the Dodger blue drinks, great, great environment, great stadium. That's one that I remember, like, obviously mm-hmm. very well, but that's a cool experience. I'm glad that was your first time, huh?
So I now have Dodger Stadium and Fenway as places I've been to, but never seen a ball game. I've been at Fenway 3 times for a Winter Classic and 2 concerts, but never seen baseball there. So
what about Wrigley for you?
Yeah, Wrigley a lot, actually.
Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, again, it's been fun as a, you know, infrequent visitor, but over the decades, just seeing how it will always kind of look the same from the outside, but then you just see all the little wrinkles, the upgraded facilities, the bathrooms, the concession stands, and it's like, oh, they're doing everything they can to maximize the still limited square footage that they have to do things. Now, I did get to a place that I never thought I would, quite frankly. And again, it was very childhood driven. Watching the Kings with the Triple Crown line, and watching the Lakers against the Celtics every year, it seemed like. But then along came the new arenas, and I just thought, well, I'm never going to get to the Forum. But thankfully, over the last 15 years, they've converted the old Forum into strictly a concert venue now. It is one of, if not the only, arenas in America that is strictly a concert venue now, not multi-purpose anything. It's just that. And so this is where my spontaneous trivia for you comes in. So I got to the Forum on Friday night for a show, obviously. And well, actually, it was really cool going down Kareem Court. And I thought, wow, this feels
beach
like
access too. You're not too far from the beach either. That's a nice spot. Yeah.
So it's small. It feels small compared to the, you know, the world we live in now. And it really does feel like a theater when you come in, like carpeting, black and red. And it's just, that's what it is. But there were images on the concourse, 8 of them all the way around, in like the vomitories of like images of concerts that have happened at the Forum.
Oh, wow.
In its history. Now, there were 8. So if I asked you to, like, who are the 8 artists that were featured prominently around, let's call it the 100 level of the Forum, historical music icons, singers or bands, where would you start?
Okay, so you threw in bands, so that's important because that was part of my qualifying question. Are these 8 acts and maybe there's only one face, like if a band, okay. So I'm going to start, though. So I'm thinking about the Forum when it was actually active, like they would have had concerts there. I'm going to isolate like the 70s and maybe the 80s.
Perfect.
Okay. I'm going to go Elvis Presley.
Yes.
All right. We're going to start with Elvis.
Yes.
You know, Mr. Vegas, Mr. LA, that makes a lot of sense. I'm going to go with a Beatle of some sort.
No.
No?
Now, that's not to say they aren't featured somewhere else that I didn't see. But, you know, like the next level up, it was curtained off, so couldn't get up there.
Okay. Boy, that's interesting. This is going to be tricky, man.
Just think classic rock and you'll fill in the dots real quick.
Well, no, I'm thinking about it. Yeah. So like, you know, I want to say Zeppelin played at the Forum.
That's two.
Yeah. So which one was Jimmy Page or Robert Plant?
Well, it was like the whole band.
Okay. The whole band. Okay. Yeah. I gotcha. Yeah. Jim Morrison, because they are like from the Doors.
No,
they're California.
But that would have stopped me in my tracks if I'd seen that.
That would make sense, wouldn't it? I mean, the California bass. Yeah. Okay. So, wow. They got to get on that. Let's see. Man,
again,
this is tricky.
The Forum Club is down in the basement, so there's probably all these images down there that you're talking about. Let me rattle through. Elvis, yeah. Zeppelin, The Who, The Stones, The Eagles. Mm. But then there were three individuals that were of interest to me. Prince.
Yeah.
Michael Jackson.
Okay, yeah.
And Neil Diamond.
Neil Diamond
makes one that I saw when I walked in. And I was like, I was not expecting this. And it was like, so that really got me just fixated on, I wanted to walk all the way around and say like, well, what other artists do they have these beautiful images of? Because other than that, again, it's just like kind of walking into a theater. Like it's endless, nice concessions. And you just feel like you're about to walk into the bowl and see a big movie show. But it was
I just Googled.
Yeah.
I wanted to check Neil Diamond because I was thinking, like, was Hot August Night at the Forum, but it was actually at the Greek Theater.
Oh, I got to.
It would have made sense.
Dude, that's where I started on this trip. Yeah. I got to the Greek Theater for the first time.
No kidding. Hey, the only other like stadium, to go back to your question, you know, I've seen Notre Dame football. I saw them as a visitor at Michigan State. We did a doubleheader one time, went to the Big House in the morning for a Michigan versus Wisconsin game. And then at night, Michigan State hosted Notre Dame. I need to see Notre Dame. And I'm not the biggest Notre Dame guy, but just steeped in history. I need to see a Notre Dame game in South Bend. That's probably the best answer, I think, to your question. Just to circle back to that. It kind of hit me and I wanted to close the loop.
Was there ever a time you were in, I think you were, bands that populated Warped Tour?
A little bit. Like I liked Rancid, but I was never like going to see a lot of those bands. So
yeah.
One band I'd like to go see with you would be Goldfinger though.
Dude, are you playing me right now? Like, do you have access to my phone this weekend?
No. Why?
It was, so Warped Tour had, it's having its 30th anniversary. It's been gone for a while. It's in the midst of its 30th anniversary. They're only doing three locations: DC, this past weekend in Long Beach, and Orlando. On Saturday, the highlight of my day was seeing Goldfinger. I kid you not. And I still can't believe you're prompting me with this. And the best part about the show was when they led into it by holding up their gold record for the song Superman. And they gave all the credit in the world to legendary skater Tony Hawk, who came out and sang Superman. And the crowd was going wild. So
that's pretty cool.
So if that was an invitation, yes, I would gladly go see Goldfinger with you again.
Little inside baseball for the people listening or watching, though. One time, Duffer, you may not even remember this. One time you and I were in a car coming back from an Amherst game, cranking. We turned that thing up to 12. And then we were listening to Goldfinger going on the 90 coming back from Rochester, back to the to the Buffalo area. And that's a memory that I have in my head. And that's why I was like, we got to make that happen in real life, not just in the car.
I don't think I've ever been as dirty physically as when I came home from Warped Tour last night. Like like my dad owned a garage mechanic shop. I don't think I've been as dirty since I used, it was under my nails. Like I sat down on my bed here in the hotel room at like 11 o'clock last night and it was instantly like dirty. I'm like, what is wrong with me? And yeah, it was, what an experience, man. Like just.
That grit and grime. Like I need my fourth liners to look every night.
Man, it was a thing. I don't know if I can do it again. I mean, I'm hopeful that maybe if they have a 50th anniversary, I'll still be able to kick it one more time. But I don't really have any designs on going to the 33rd, the 37th, and the 43rd Warp Tours. Like, the weekend was really good, but I think I might have maxed out. So
I've been waiting for Summer of Duffer. This is a Summer of Duffer update.
I don't think Skechers makes a brand that I could wear that would alleviate any of the back problems of standing on hot concrete for 12 hours. All right, buddy. You teased us right off the top. Best and worst of the weekend. Chris Baker will deliver on that front when we come back. It is the Monday edition of Sabres Live. Marty's on the links today. He's back tomorrow. We're back right after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Lots of hockey talk and music, a little bit of pop culture mixed in here on this day. The good news is we didn't get nearly as deep into the Amerks as I wanted to, so I'm going to be inviting you back pretty soon, Bakes.
Bummer.
I also, did you ever see Ozzy? Did you like Ozzy?
I liked Ozzy. Never saw him, but yeah, our people are dropping like flies these days. They go in threes, and that was one of the three that went that week.
Tell you what, I don't know. Well, other than being at an Aussie show, I don't think I could have witnessed more Aussie t-shirts than what I saw over the course of the weekend out here. Holy cow. Just revered.
It's cool.
Absolutely loved. What's your best of the weekend that you've been teasing us with?
It's not really a heavy tease, no surprise, golf, but a little bit of a different spin on golf. I've been doing, these little weekend, like Sunday afternoon dates, little nine and dine dates, and had a really good one yesterday in Northern Pennsylvania. Very pretty, definitely a course that I would go back to in the Warren, Pennsylvania area, very hilly. I could see it with nice foliage. It was a beautiful day. Played nine holes, had the tunes going while we're playing, had some good golf shots, had plenty of bad ones as well, but it didn't matter. And that's always a good day. Went right down the road about a mile away. There's a nice, rustic restaurant, ribs, had some ribs that just fell off the bone. Had a couple, again, just a nice couple cold refreshments there. It's just a great day. Having a partner with you that wants to golf is the best thing on earth, man. And I highly recommend getting out there for your nine and dines. Get out there on those Sunday afternoons.
You're going to be working for the Warren, PA Chamber of Commerce pretty soon here.
They got my number. Hey, and the worst of the weekend was just that it was too short, as always, man.
Yeah.
But it was good to wake up and have this look forward to spending this Monday lunch hour with you here today, Duffer.
What's it going to take to get your game back to the Baker level I knew from a couple years ago?
Probably just bionic knees at this point, shoulders, you know what I mean? I don't know. I'm new clubs, I'm always that archer that's going to blame his arrows.
Okay. Lastly, from a hockey standpoint, like, is there a big domino still to fall in your opinion this summer in the NHL?
I don't think so. I think that a lot of the business has been tidied. I just don't see anything happen. I think, like we talked about earlier in the show, I think McTavish is going to still be in Anaheim. Mm-hmm. I just think all those dominoes are going to settle where they were. And it's going to be a fun camp. I can't stress that enough. Hopefully we get a chance to talk a little bit about it more closer to the season.
Well, we do know that, next contracts for the likes of McDavid and Eichel will also be potentially of huge news this summer. Bakes, awesome stuff today. Thanks, folks. Marty's back tomorrow. We'll see you then.